8. Caro gaped at Julian. Whatever she'd expected, that certainly wasn't it. Julian said, "Okay, that was a little too abrupt, but it's at the heart of this project."
"It's not," Weigert cried. "Julian, you're misleading her."
"Not really. Immortality is the part of the project that the public is going to fasten on. And right now, in this room, she's the public. Let me be clear, Caro. We're not creating immortality through some sort of magic elixir or genetic tweaking. What we're doing is proving scientifically that immortality already exists because reality is not what most people think it is. George, do you like that statement better?"
"Yes." "No! You've left out all the..."
"Yes, you're right. The background needs to be thoroughly explained in order to convince anyone. And to explain to you, Caro, just how you fit into our research, I'd like to take you on a quick tour of the research wing of the compound." Caro had had time to move past shock and find words. She stood.
"I think we're done here. I'd like to go back to the airport, please. If you people, including my great uncle, if what you're doing here is using neurosurgery to alter the way the brain creates reality, then I want you to know, with all due respect, that I think you're all insane."
Weigert paled. Julian said, "The definition of insanity is so mutable, just like the brain's plasticity. I'm sure you know about recent surprises in research on neuroplasticity. Your guess is essentially correct, but very incomplete. You've made a long trip to get here. Don't leave before you at least see what we're doing." How could any tour justify everything that had already been said? But sudden curiosity, the curiosity that had led Caro to brain mapping in the first place, made her nod to Julian. A quick tour couldn't hurt, could it? Also, was she willing to lose the astronomical salary that could help Ellen? Or the possible favorable professional references from a Nobel laureate that might rescue her career? Or the chance to do neurosurgery? Yes, she'd reject all that if it meant performing some version of 1950s lobotomies that turned people into zombies. Caro said,
"I don't want this coffee, after all. Sorry."
"No problem," Julian said. "Let's go." As they left the security office, Caro glanced back over her shoulder. Weigert was washing out their coffee cups in the little sink, each movement as meticulous and purposeful as if he were performing surgery. But... In the courtyard, Julian said, "You've already seen Wing 1, completely living quarters. This is Wing 2. Except for the security office, it's James's domain. He is..."
Caro smiled. "I already met James. He informed me that his title is Major Domo."
"I'm sure he did. He supervises his housekeeping staff, most of whom live off-site, from his office. There, beside the gate opposite the security office. The rest of the rooms..."
He pointed at each door circling the courtyard.
"Are the kitchen, housekeeping staff lounge, laundry, storerooms, gym, and there, just opposite with the walls folded open, the refectory. Breakfast is 6 to 10, lunch noon through 2, dinner 6 till whenever, but the kitchen never really closes and food is pretty much available anytime. James's staff will bring a tray to your room on request. The food is basic, but edible."
Caro peered into the low-ceilinged space, now deserted. Metal tables, folding chairs, bare whitewashed walls. Cafeteria line with plexiglass sneeze guards.
"Refectory?" Julian grinned. "I know. But Weigert and Watkins attended Oxford together. George taught there afterward while doing research, and his nomenclature is still stuck somewhere between habit and hope."
Caro remembered that, unlike Julian,
who was dressed for the tropics in khaki shorts and a yellow polo. Weigert had worn a short-sleeved rayon button-down and a striped tie, which looked as out of place as a tuxedo on a beach. Caro could picture him in a Don's robe, even though such things hadn't been worn in the United States in 100 years, and certainly not in a physics lab. Julian led her to a door that he keyed open with a thumbprint. This is Wing 3. Another large courtyard. No picnic benches or palm trees here, although it did have one flower bed in the middle, looking less well-tended than those in Wings 1 and 2. Clearly a more serious courtyard, circled by closed doors bearing thumbprint locks. No signs on the doors, which suggested that anyone in this area already knew where they were going. Julian thumbed open a door. This side of Wing 3 is the hospital proper. We'll walk through, although it's not being used right now. Not being... If you hold your questions for just a bit, I'll explain later. I promise. A warm smile, which she tried to ignore. She was not going to succumb to a sexy lunatic who clearly thought he was God's gift to women. Labs, radiology, a single OR with scrub room, recovery, nurse's station, everything as expected, except that there were only 4 patient rooms and 2 ICU beds, and no people. Where are... Most of the hospital staff isn't here right now. They'll all move back to the compound when you begin operating. Please, Caro, just bear with me. There's more to see, and it will help with explanations. He led her out of the hospital. This was what she would be getting instead of Fairleigh Memorial. And across the courtyard to another door, saying, I'll take your thumbprint after you tell us for certain that you're staying. Meanwhile, this area is why everything else in the compound exists. I thought it existed because I'm observing it, Caro said. He laughed. Then observe carefully. They walked through a conference room, much larger than the one behind the security office, but equipped with the same utilitarian furniture, plus a whiteboard on one windowless wall. The conference room led to a still larger space, with desks and storage cabinets at one end. At the other end stood 2 huge computer consoles with a cot between them, plus a dazzling array of equipment. Caro said, You have an EFMRI? Really? Have you used one? Yes. Fairleigh Memorial did not have an enhanced functional MRI. There were only 12 or so in the United States. Invented only a few years earlier, it took clearer, more detailed images of brain activity than anyone had thought possible. Caro and Paul Becker had traveled twice to Johns Hopkins to use their machine for brain mapping work. On those trips, he'd never been inappropriate. What a stuffy word for something that had just altered Caro's entire life. Although, of course, he hadn't been drunk either. Cables from the EFMRI disappeared into the wall, except for ones that led to another large, gleaming piece of machinery. Julian said, And that behemoth over there is the latest in Japanese tech. It does deep image reconstruction. First, you train the machine on your personal brain. After training, it uses reconstruction algorithms to optimize, display, and record the imagery of what you're thinking about. The fidelity and detail are both incredible, magnitudes better than with previous iterations. Where do those other cables go? To an encryptor. Data from this experimental setup needs crunching with a lot more computer power than we could have here. Sam's bought time on the MIT cluster. The data goes by satellite. Caro stared at the cables, at the mind-reading machine, at the EFMRI. The money being expended staggered her. Her salary was only a minuscule fraction, and she still didn't know what she was supposed to do to earn it. Julian, if this facility is conducting clinical trials on brain function, why is it being explained to me by a physicist
and a software developer. What exactly is this a research trial of? Why are there no other medical personnel here, and what does all of it have to do with proving immortality? Even saying that last made Caro feel ridiculous. Like proving ghosts, witchcraft, or the popularity of chia pets. It's an unusual clinical trial, Julian said. In fact, that's not really the right word for it. It's a research project, and we do have medical personnel. Watkins, of course. Dr. Lyle Richard Luskin, who oversees both our patients and Sam Watkins's care. You'll meet him tomorrow. Your neuroradiologist and anesthesiologist will be returning shortly to the island, as will Camilla Franklin's nursing staff. Our former neurosurgeon, David Ernest Weeks, unfortunately drowned last month in a diving accident. But your backup surgeon, Dr. Ralph Egan, is here. However, he's only temporary, since he's newly board certified and will be leaving us for what he really wanted and has been offered, a surgical position in Los Angeles. We're already looking for a more permanent backup for you. How were you able to recruit someone on just a temporary basis? Julian smiled, his long, lean body reclining negligently against the bulk of the computer console, and once again, she felt the tug of attraction. He said, "Ralph is a relative of mine, but a real neurosurgeon, nonetheless. We provide our patients with excellent medical care." They're not really patients, though, are they? They're not ill. They're research subjects. Yes. Volunteers eager to make a major contribution to science, starting with, but not limited to, groundbreaking brain mapping. And once you fully understand what we're doing here and why, I think you'll be convinced to stay.
The same thing Weigert had said. Before Caro could answer, the physicist pushed through the door. Somehow he managed to simultaneously look both wary and eager.
Dr. Soames Watkins, your uncle suggested I follow you to supplement Julian's tour and explanations. With more physics, you know, to fully illuminate your function here.
Caro nodded, fleetingly amused to see that now it was Julian who looked wary. She guessed what he was thinking. Weigert would talk such high-level physics that she would be unable to follow him and would be put off the research in its entirety. However, Weigert began simply enough.
Dr. Soames Watkins, you already said you've heard of the multiverse?
In vague terms.
Good. Mathematics tells us that the universe we perceive is only one of many. Every time an observation is made, by humans, dogs, elephants, the universe holds the possibility of other branches of itself, with all other possible outcomes of that observation.
Every time? Resulting in, what, an infinite number of possible universes?
Yes, you grasp it. You see, the wave function and decoherence.
Julian interrupted.
I don't think Caro needs wave functions just yet. George, if I may?
Certainly, Weigert said. Although it was clear he was bubbling over with wave functions, decoherence, and probably esoteric math. His deeply lined face glowed, and Caro felt herself warming to him. This man loved his subject with a single-minded, uncomplicated passion she hadn't seen in many neurosurgeons, who usually juggled surgery, rank, money, and hospital politics, not to mention coping with the emotional fallout of unsuccessful surgeries. At least physics did not result in someone dying. Usually.
Julian said, as George indicated, there are many, many potential universes branching off from this one, created by observations. Yes, even by elephants. I saw you startle a little at that. George is fond of elephants.
Splendid beasts. Weigert said. Very intelligent. But the moment of decoherence...
We are, however, Julian interrupted, concerned here with universes branching off from
human observations. Each one starts out the same as ours, and then evolves on its own to include things that do not happen, or happen differently, from what we perceive as our reality. The research we are all doing has gone on for years, or in the case of George, who formulated the theory behind the research, for decades. We have found a way for human consciousness to enter, actually to create, another branch of the universe. Not the body, of course, our material selves remain here, but consciousness enters another branch of the multiverse by altering all the algorithms hardwired into your brain. Those algorithms are what interpret the information coming to your brain from your senses, creating red, for instance. Enter another branch of the multiverse, Caro said. Create and inhabit. Just as your brain already creates the reality of the table we discussed in the conference room. How? Caro said, although she already had a suspicion of the answer. Through extensively programmed chips, surgically implanted in the brain, which are connected to even more extensive programming in that computer there. Julian pointed to the huge metal object whose cables dangled over the cot. Julian. Dr. Weigert. How can you even believe that could ever work? Three reasons. Julian watched her closely. First, George's math shows that it can. Second, altering the way the brain perceives reality is actually something we are all familiar with. In dreams, with consciousness-altering drugs, during a high fever. Last night, for instance, I dreamed I was walking barefoot on a beach. I could see and hear the waves, even feel the beach pebbles underneath my feet. We dismiss dreams because they end when we wake up. But as George said, everything we experience is only a whirl of quantum information in our brains. Awake or dreaming, you're experiencing the same biophysical process. The algorithms in my mind created that beach, those waves, the pebbles. Those algorithms are the tools your mind uses to put everything together. Life as we know it is observer determined, which seems to trap us in the universe we're familiar with. But change the algorithms, and you can create a different reality. And third, I know what the implanted brain chip does, because I have experienced it. I'm the only person David Weeks implanted before he died. Caro said, he did what? Implanted a computer chip in your brain? Yes, I'm a cyborg. You're a lunatic. Before Caro could say that aloud, Weigert ventured, if I can just explain a little more about decoherence and collapsing the wave. Later, George, Julian said. Let's allow Caro to ask all the rest of the questions I know she's bursting with. But Caro didn't want to ask more questions until she'd had a chance to formulate them with greater precision, since how can you be so deluded did not count as scientific precision. She needed to sort out everything she'd already heard. How much sleep had she gotten last night? 3 hours, tops. She was accustomed to going without sleep. No one got through med school without acquiring that ability. But this was exhaustion of a different sort. Emotional, intellectual. More than sleep, she needed to be alone to think. Sleep, however, was a good excuse. She said, actually, I'm pretty tired. I can imagine, Julian said. 2 flights, and now all this information? Let me show you to your room. Thank you. Before she could say more, the door opened and a man entered. Julian, he said. The police are here. I told them that Dr. Watkins is ill, and they want to speak to whoever else is in charge. Julian rose. Okay. Caro, this is Aiden Eberhardt, my chief assistant. Dr. Weigert will show you to your room. 6th on the left, George. He vanished through the door. Weigert looked at her doubtfully and said,
If you'd like just a bit more clarity on decoherence.
Caro said, Later, Dr. Weigert. I'm feeling a little decohered myself. And Weigert, again surprising her, went in an instant from overly erudite and possibly deluded theorist to likable old man and laughed.